courtside of the virtual hardwood, it's the NLSC podcast, episode number 267. I'm Andrew, with you as always, and with me this week is Kenny.
Hey Andrew, it's good to be back, both here on the podcast and in Australia, I suppose.
Yeah, welcoming you back, not just back to the show, but also to the land down under. You've been over in the States for quite a fun holiday.
Yeah, so I was over there for about a month, went from California to Colorado and then up to British Columbia, which was cool. That was my first time in Canada, and then back down to California and then back home. So it was a nice long holiday that I think I needed.
Always good to get away, and you actually got to take in not one but two Nuggets games, your favorite team, in Denver.
Yeah, so they didn't win either game, but the Nets one was definitely a fun game because, you know, even though it didn't go the way I wanted, the shot that Caris LeVert hit in the end was pretty cool. And, yeah, that was quite exciting to see, even though, yeah, my team was definitely on the wrong end of it. But, yeah, both games were, you know, a joy to watch. The fans in Denver make the atmosphere amazing. You know, they're a great crowd. And, yeah, it was definitely all I'd hoped for and more.
Did Fareed play in that one? Because he's with Brooklyn now, of course. Did he get any court time for them, that one?
He didn't get any court time, unfortunately, but he did get a nice tribute.
That's cool.
Like, on the big screen. So, yeah, that was a nice touch. And something that, you know, it didn't even occur to me that, like, I completely forgot that Fareed was actually playing for the Nets. So, yeah, that was just a happy coincidence that I had to be there for that night. So, yeah, that was a really good experience.
And we've talked before about how it's kind of a shame that he's fallen off and been a bit outmoded within this era of stretch fours and everything. But I still think he's got a lot to contribute. So, yeah, it is a shame that he moved on from the Nuggets, of course, and that he didn't get to play. But awesome that you got to take in a couple of games. And I know you got some good swag, some good merch as well that's authentically right there from the States.
Yeah, I... So I got one of the Mile High City jerseys from Denver. It was a Paul Millsap one. I was going to get a Nikola Jokic one, but they were sold out. But Millsap's, you know, I really like Paul Millsap as well. So, you know, that was a good jersey to get. I got one of those retro caps as well, of like the little miner that they used to have, I think maybe back in the 60s or 70s.
Like, that, yeah, pretty... that's ABA, I think, that one. Possibly, yeah. Early NBA, yeah.
So that cap was on special for about 15 American, so I had to snap that up. And when I was in Vancouver, I actually bought a Sharif Abdur-Rahim jersey. So that was really cool. It was another one of those things where it completely slipped my mind that Vancouver had a team. But yeah, of course, the Vancouver Grizzlies. And, you know, when I went to the sports shop, they had a choice between that and Mike Bibby. And yeah, I chose the Abdur-Rahim.
Not a bad choice, and I do love that jersey still. I know a lot of people rip on it, but, you know, the Thunder that they brought in at their City Edition uniforms this year, and they kind of paid tribute, I think, to that design with the Native American markings on the jersey. And, yeah, I always liked that, on the trim, I should say, always liked that original Grizzlies jersey. It stood out, if nothing else.
Yeah, it's a really nice jersey. I really like the color. It's very... I don't know, it's very much of the time, I suppose. Like, they had, like, those kind of colors, like, with teal, that and yep. the teal Pistons jersey, which I really like that jersey.
I do too, yeah.
It's got a lot of the stitching as well, so, like, the stitch numbers and everything like that. So, yeah, it's a really cool jersey. I also picked up a cap of the Vancouver Grizzlies as well, so, yeah, pick up some really nice swag. Didn't in California though, because I mean, I almost bought a Lonzo Ball jersey as like a goof, but I decided not to. I thought it was like a bit too much money for an elaborate troll. So
for a gag, yeah. You know, just taken a photo, sent it to Valor. I know he would have really appreciated
I need to get my Trae Young jersey for that, I think.
Oh, of course, with the caption better than Doncic, which neither of us actually believe. I don't think. It is a troll.
Yeah, absolutely, and I can attest to the fact that he's not better than Doncic because he's actually on my team at the moment in my career, so no, he's not.
Well said. Just taking a quick look, just to check ourselves on that Nuggets logo. Yeah, that was their final ABA and first NBA logo, so definitely a very cool throwback there.
Cool. Yeah, so I'm really happy now that I've got that cap.
But, maybe the only one that would be more retro, well, actually, wouldn't be even newer, but the Rainbow Skyline was probably the other one that, you know how much I love that branding for the Nuggets. But no,
yeah, and they're bringing it back as well.
You know what? I like it a bit more than the rounded logos, than the circular logos. At least it had some character, I think. Although the Seattle Supersonics Skyline logo was quite similar too, actually, so... sometimes NBA logos not always have the most creativity, but you know, I guess I'm a fan of the team that has that's had the same logo since they came into the league. The Bulls have never changed their logos, except for I guess some partial logos. But nevertheless, yeah, it's really great to hear that you had such a good trip and enjoyed yourself. Got to take in some games. Yeah, it's just unfortunate that you couldn't pull out a controller and start taking over and actually get them the win. So we are back on the air this week. We did miss last week, unfortunately. Ben was a bit under the weather. You just got back into the country. I have tried the solo podcast before, and I even bored myself talking to myself all those times, the couple of times. So it's good to get back on the air this week. Catch up on some news. Some patches have come through, of course. You would have had to... we were talking about it before we started recording. You mentioned you had to put on the PS4 and get a bunch of updates in for the games. They came through while you were away.
Yeah, so that's pretty much the first thing I did when I got through the door, because I knew that, just NBA Live 19 alone had a 10 gig update. So, basically I queued up the NBA 2K19 one, and then once that was done, I installed Red Dead Redemption 2, and then got the patch for NBA Live 19 overnight. So, yeah. There was quite a bit of downloading, particularly for my slow internet. So, yeah,
I'm very much appreciating being on NBN these days with that connection coming down. Watching a 15 gig patch or whatever come through, and just like, they'll be done in 2 hours or whatever. So, and I'm also on unlimited now, so streaming everything, downloading everything, it just doesn't matter. But yeah, I mean, if you are on the slower connection, the 10 gig patch is definitely a bit of a hit. You got to wait for that to happen overnight. Pushing through a lot of content these days. They're pushing through new player likenesses, some new celebrations, new animations like that, even some new gameplay animations, which we'll talk about in a sec, but certainly new commentary updates. And I know you were mentioning before we started recording that you have caught a couple of the new lines.
Yeah, so Jay Williams has had like a few little tidbits about Liz Cambage that I noticed when I was playing the WNBA. So that was pretty cool. Aside from that, I haven't noticed a whole lot more, but, then again, I'm not really a fan of the commentary, so it wasn't something I was particularly looking out for. But
we are on record with our feelings about that. Hope everybody caught the Easter egg on the last show that you were on.
yeah, absolutely. I realized that was my last appearance on the show, so that was quite a amusing way to end the podcast, but I just noticed a few things, like particularly the Liz Cambage thing, because she's actually got her face in the game now, which is really cool. I think that came in a couple of patches ago, maybe. That definitely wasn't in the game when I left Australia, so that was definitely one of the first things I checked out.
That might have been 1.13, I think, was a lot of the likeness updates. Yeah, it could have been. They have pushed through quite a few. Some big NBA, big name NBA players, some role players, and of course the WNBA players as well. On the commentary, I have heard a couple of lines that sounded a bit more excited when there was a dunk or a big moment late in the game. I'm not sure whether I just haven't heard them before. It's just luck of the draw. They're new, but I did notice in one of the patch notes that they have they did some kind of adjustment for the commentary for. I'm trying to find the wording. Wasn't 1.15, which is the latest patch. They were pushing through pretty much a patch per week for a while there. Secondly, patch notes for 114, 113. They've also, of course, fixed more desync issues and some gameplay tuning. They've changed the shot logic for shot contesting now. So defenders who are behind the ball carry not actively contesting during layup attempts will no longer affect the percentage of the shot, which, I mean, obviously with players bearing down on you from behind can affect the shot, but not to the extent. I mean, that's been a problem in 2K and live, so I'm glad they addressed that as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it doesn't affect how you get your look at the rim, so yeah, it really shouldn't affect your shot unless they actually block it. So yeah, I think that's a good update.
Just looking at the notes for 1.14, which was the second to last patch that's come through, patch and content update, under audio there's a note, intensity tuning for more high intensity moments. So I think they may have done something there that's had some commentary that fits the situation, that's a bit more excitable. So maybe that's what I'm noticing.
Yeah, and I think that's a positive as well, because if NBA Live has had, I mean, I think overall the presentation of NBA Live has been really good the last, you know, few, I guess the last few iterations of it. I thought it was good in 16, you know, pretty, like, really good in 18. But I think one of the weaknesses was always, like, the commentary and how kind of, you know, nonchalant they seemed at really big moments. So, yeah, it's good that they've definitely improved upon that.
Yeah, a bit dry, a bit unexcited, I guess, at times. Like, oh, and he wins the game. And, like, yeah, really should be reacting with a little bit more excitement in this situation, especially with playoff atmosphere and whatnot switched on. So that's definitely a good addition, good fix that they've done there. And I think I have noticed it. I mean, that really seems to go with what I've noticed on a couple of those late-game situations. They've been looking at online stability, obviously a big deal these days with so many players playing online. The city uniforms are in there as of the latest update, which is good to see. Great to see, in fact. They're also in the One Store, and I believe they're playable in Play Now franchise and the League. So I'm not sure if they're in Ultimate Team yet. I think that's one thing where Ultimate Team is definitely lagging behind the last couple of games is the content like that.
Definitely, and I think it would kind of add another layer to the mode if they could have, like, retro jerseys, because I know that, you know, playing my team in 16 and 17, it was really fun collecting the jerseys, even though it was, like, kind of tiresome trying to collect jerseys like, say, the Celtics or the Bulls, because they haven't really had enough, like, alterations of their jerseys to kind of warrant, you know, the amount of different ones in the collection. But, you know, for teams that have, like, changed up their look over the last 20 years, yeah, I think it's definitely like a nice little bonus to have in the mode.
And speaking of little functionality, and I definitely agree, I shouldn't skip over that, because I do also miss that in live, not having to be able to select all the different jerseys like we were able to in previous games.
Yeah,
I mean, it's nice that they have the current jerseys, the current throwbacks that they're wearing on the 2019 season throwbacks, but they're representing all the jerseys that are being worn during the current season. But having that full complement of retro jerseys like 2K has done, especially since 2K has this year put in so many extra jerseys, they've got pretty much every team in 2K, including the all-time teams, which I was really glad that they did, has the full complement of retro jerseys pretty much from the whole history of the team, at least in the NBA era. I think maybe some teams don't have that were in the ABA. You know, the few that are ABA holdovers don't think they have some of the ABA jerseys. They might do, I have to double check. But having that full complement, just being able to change it up and wear different jerseys in my league or even just play now, and having them to be collected in my team, so much better. And I wish Live would go back to that. And it's one of those things where I feel like Live is doing a great job of being current and all that kind of stuff, but I feel like they're not really going above and beyond with content like that. And they used to. They used to go above and beyond with that kind of content and the Decade All-Stars and Legends Pool and everything. And it feels like they're kind of doing the bare minimum in some respects. And I know it's a smaller team, and I don't want to disparage the work they do, because they do work very hard. But it does feel like NBA Live used to innovate so much and add this extra content, and now not so much.
It does seem like NBA Live is kind of doing the bare minimum in terms of, you know, that kind of stuff. But
for an NBA game, like, this is just
the
bare minimum to be an NBA sim kind of thing.
Yeah, pretty much. And that's one thing I've enjoyed about 2K19 so far. I'm currently doing, like, a retro month in my league. That's something I like to do, like, you know, across every my league or, you know, dynasty that I've had. Is dedicate an entire month to wearing retro jerseys. you know, it's a little thing, but it's something that just kind of keeps the game interesting. And, you know, you can kind of mix and match. Like, you can, you know, I like to put on the rainbow ones for one game and then put on the ones from the 90s with, like, the more kind of subtle colors. And, it's just a fun thing to be able to do. And, you know, it's a... it just enhances that experience just a little bit more.
Looking at the final parts of the patch notes, they've also notified users that they're the host in live run, adjusted the reward tuning for XP in live run 3v3, 5v5, and a world tour. And users can also choose to skip examining items when opening rewards. And having played a couple of live events recently, I think that's a really good idea. Like it always was bothering me having to examine the rewards after getting them. I just wanted to skip, you know, open the crate. Okay, I see the items. I don't need to look at them in depth.
Yeah.
It's nice to be able to, if you wish, but to be able to skip that, to skip examining items, little functionality like that, I think, is always worth putting in. So I'm glad that they're doing little fixes like that as well. I mean, Ben and I have talked about in previous shows how we'd like to see a bit more gameplay tuning or content additions, and certainly that is the case, but I also like to see these little things added as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, going back to that point about skipping examining items, I know there was a few times where I was like, okay, just make sure you don't equip that Lakers jersey
because
I really don't want to wear that thing.
Yeah. And that's the thing, you could very easily end up equipping it accidentally.
Yeah, definitely. And that's a nice bit of functionality, I suppose, that they've included now.
And they've done other things, other gameplay tuning, the new audio, of course, improved matchmaking, just looking back at some previous patch notes. They've even fixed the kerning on the number 11 jerseys, which has been a problem in live for many years now, actually. But they've gone ahead and fixed that. Added, of course, memorial patches to the Trailblazers. New jerseys, Denver Nuggets have got their sponsor patch fixed. Online stability. So they continue to work hard on the game, and hopefully they do continue to push through some quality updates. Didn't get one last week, I would imagine, because of Thanksgiving, of course. But game is in pretty good shape, and I've played some games recently, including a solo live event, which I quite enjoyed, actually, not having to play with random people online. Still has a long way to go. I've said it in previous shows, but Live 19 launch was pretty strong at launch, has gotten better since. I still feel like the game's on the right track, and the patches have not really ruined it, which is a really big thing. And you know, as you know from playing 2K17, how much we really... were frustrated by how the game was really over-tuned sometimes, especially for online. So it's been nice to see Live continue to improve and not really take any backward steps with the patches.
Yeah, they're definitely going in the right direction, and I think that's all you can really hope for at this point. I kind of hope that they make some really big kind of additions for NBA Live 20, but what they're doing now is just essentially refining the current game, and I mean, that's really all we can ask from them at this point.
And you bring up Live 20. Hopefully there will continue to be new content, new further improvements to gameplay and whatnot, but I think 20, and I know I've said about 18 and 19, but I think 20 especially, being a big round year and this many years into what is turning out to be a successful rebuilding process, it really needs to be a content and mode update, I think, because that remains one of the biggest weaknesses at the moment. And the depth of the modes, the depth of the experience, little things like having the commentary acknowledge when you're doing something historical, and because 2K does that, and we'll touch on that in a little bit as well. Just those little things, the presentation, that make you feel like that you are actually playing in the NBA, and you're playing in an NBA that has such a long, rich history with all these records that you can shoot for and break. And even things like the NBA records and all-time leaderboards and everything that you can access in 2K, they're little things, but they could make it so much better, make Live so much better to have that kind of content in both the One and Franchise, or Dynasty, whatever they end up calling it moving forward. Just have the depth of the experience and to really keep you engaged and that feeling like you are interacting with an interactive NBA.
Well, those records give you something to aspire to, because you know, as you said, we'll go into it a bit in a bit, but when you realize that you're close to a record, you start to think, oh wow, like, this is something I can actually achieve, and it adds like another layer to your experience. So NBA Live definitely needs a lot of that kind of stuff going forward. Probably introduce it incrementally because it might be a bit much maybe for the next game. It might be like a long-term plan that they have to put in. But I think at the moment, all the depth in NBA Live 19 seems to be in the one in all those street modes. And I kind of have mixed feelings about that because I think, like, originally I thought that's where NBA Live could separate itself from 2K. But at the end of the day, 2K have got the whole, you know, competitive E-League thing. Yeah. And I think NBA Live kind of need to stray away from that and go more to a traditional basketball game.
I think they could really appeal to the people who feel that they're not being catered to by 2K, with 2K going that esports route. You know, it's I think it would be a great idea. I'm all for that more traditional approach, and certainly catching up in things. I mean, they're not going to become my league overnight because that's been worked on for years. And of course, our good buddy Lefto, all the work he's put into my league, he and his team on that mode, and how that's become one of the deepest, if not the deepest and best franchise experiences in basketball gaming and maybe sports gaming in general. What they've done with My League is just incredible. And it's a shame because Live brought in franchise first. Live really, back in NBA Live 2000, they pioneered that, and it's never really gone to the length that 2K has done it. And I'd just love to see them. I know it's been about rebuilding the experience and getting to where they need to be, but I want to see them get back to innovating and adding that extra content and going that extra mile and not just on the street stuff and adding clothing and everything. I want to see them get back into the NBA side of things. Now, I know I'm repeating things from previous shows, but I just think it's so important that they do that moving forward.
Particularly since other sports titles in EA Sports have such, you know, they have such deep modes. Like you look at some a game like FIFA or even NHL, their season modes are really quite in depth, and you know, it feels, I don't know, the experience is quite amazing. Like particularly in FIFA, since it has like all the licenses from all the different leagues and whatnot. But yeah, I think that's something that NBA Live kind of needs to aspire to. And I suppose the direction I kind of wanted to see it to go in.
Yeah, and Madden and NHL certainly. I've been looking at some of the previews. We don't cover it that much, being a basketball gaming website, obviously. But I see it come up in the social media feeds and seeing the having a quick glance at some of the developer blogs and the stuff that's going into their franchise modes and their dynasty modes is really impressive, and you can't help but feel a little bit envious for playing Live.
Yeah, I tend to feel a bit envious, but at the same time I enjoy playing those games as well. I mean, not so much Madden, but definitely NHL was one that I played a few years ago and quite enjoyed. So I might end up picking that up, I guess, for the NHL 20 or whatever. But hopefully NBA Live can catch up or, you know, somewhat approximate what they're doing.
It's definitely important that they go in that, keep going in that direction and continue to cater to everyone. I don't think they're going to win over the audience by not doing it, but because they need to have that full, well-rounded experience. You only have to go back to NBA Live 06 on Xbox 360 that didn't have Dynasty mode, even though it was on the PC and PS2 version, etc. And that just set them back for a whole generation, and they've really been playing catch up since. So it's just tremendously important, and we'll continue to pass along our feedback, and hopefully we'll be heeded and be able to be put to use. Certainly we know that the developers check us out and do value our opinion. They've said as much, they've invited our feedback. So I suppose, Kenny, all we can do is continue to speak up, and hopefully, especially with the new studio in Madrid also working on the game, they'll have a couple of studios working on it with more assets, more manpower, hopefully will mean good things moving forward.
Yeah, and of course encourage other people in the community to speak up
if
like League is something that they're particularly passionate about. So yeah, just keep the criticism constructive and hopefully it can help moving forward.
Indeed. Somewhere where NBA Live has been very successful these past few years as they've rebuilt their console games, their main AAA game, is NBA Live Mobile, which of course is free-to-play. It is actually now, according to NBA Live's official Twitter account, the most downloaded mobile basketball game in the world currently. So that's a big milestone for NBA Live. If nothing else, it's not perhaps where the main game needs to be, but it's pretty good news, I guess, for the brand overall. And it's, I think while they were trying to rebuild NBA Live on the console, of course, having NBA Live mobile and people really getting into that at least helped the brand awareness, I think.
Definitely, and I think it helps for people who want to play the game more casually as well. It also, I think it's a good sign moving forward because it shows that there's at least a demographic there that they can kind of build upon. Now, not everybody who has a mobile has a PS4 or an Xbox or, you know, whatever. I guess those are the two main ones. It's not on Switch, is it? NBA Live?
No, just PS4 and X1.
Yeah, so I guess not everybody has, you know, those two consoles, but if they enjoy the mobile game enough and want a deeper experience, they can kind of go maybe buy one of the consoles and, yeah, get NBA Live, I suppose. So it kind of works, I suppose, as like a, for lack of a better term, a gateway to the deeper experience.
I certainly think it can be. What's interesting to me is that they're giving away a free Allen Iverson 2001 Allen Iverson card for NBA Live Mobile to celebrate the being the most downloaded game in the world. And it's funny that they've really been working with AI this year. He's one of the NBA Live team, basically. Was it Team NBA Live? I'm forgetting what the name they gave it during the previous season. But basically, he's one of their featured athletes. Yet, of course, he is has such a history with 2K.
Yeah, it was definitely... It was interesting to see him on there, like, particularly, as you say, given how many times was he on the 2K cover?
Let me think. I think the first four or five.
Him and Shaq both actually were on 2K covers quite a lot. So they were both, like, quite heavily involved in Live because when one of the initial matches you play... You're trying to figure out what your play style is, and it's Shaq, Carter, and Iverson. So,
yeah, and Shaq's a 3-time 2K cover athlete if you include the Legend Edition. Interesting that they haven't had a Legend Edition with AI yet, because, of course, again, he is their original cover player. I'm just trying to think 2K, 2K1, 2, 3, ESPN, 2K4, and then, yeah, the first five, because then Ben Wallace was on 2K5. So, and then Shaq was on 2K6 and 2K7, and then. Was it 2K18 he was the legend athlete? Or 2K17?
It would have been 18.
18, that's 2K17 was Kobe. Yeah. 16 was Michael Jordan. And this year is the 20th anniversary edition with LeBron. That's right, yeah. So, I mean, they're not exclusive, I suppose, where I know Michael Jordan does have, or I'm pretty sure he has an exclusive contract with 2K at the moment. So, it's and obviously, Iverson doesn't. But yeah, just interesting that he's been featured as a live athlete and live mobile as well, but he actually does have that history with 2K. But in any event, they are giving out that free card just for logging in as to celebrate them being the most downloaded game. I have to admit, I don't really play mobile games and mobile basketball games, basically. I do have the mobile version of NBA Jam, and it's okay. I think I did a review of it for the site, a written review some years back when it came out, but it's just not as fun to me. I mean, I'm not saying they're bad games, but I just miss having a controller in my hands, basically, so that's why I get frustrated with it. But from what I can see, how popular it is and how well it's doing, and it's maybe not for me, but... I think it's good, and it's obviously doing the right thing for the brand and keeping the brand awareness there, so it's definitely a success for EA.
Well, the download, like the amount of downloads that they're getting, it shows that it is for somebody, and that's what really matters.
Oh, exactly, yeah.
So I think, yeah, obviously not for me, but if they're attracting like a substantial audience that they might be able to get to cross over into the console games, then yeah, it's definitely a positive.
It's worth it. It's keeping the brand awareness there. And yeah, again, I should clarify, yes, absolutely. Just because it's not for us doesn't mean that it's not good. Or it's, as you say, definitely for somebody. But in case anybody's wondering why we don't really cover it on the NLSC, yeah, we're not really playing it. We can't really cover it so much. I did want to mention it because it's obviously a great sign for the brand, for EA, for the game, and for it to be the most downloaded basketball game, because 2K has the mobile version of 2K, but... And that's not including the My NBA 2K apps, the companion app every year, or the NBA Live companion app. This is the standalone mobile game. I guess people are enjoying that a lot more than the mobile version of 2K, because I think the mobile version of 2K is basically just a cut-down version of the full game, which I think if you're into that, you pretty much want to play it on PS4 or PC or X1 or Switch these days anyway, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not particularly interested in either. I kind of play... The only real game I played, like, as far as, like, NBA is concerned, was, like, that card game that used to... I mean, I guess it's probably still on there. I still have the 2K companion app, but I used to play that pretty much just for the VC. Now I just couldn't be bothered, so...
I can't be bothered, and they nerfed the amount of VC anyway, so it's...
Yeah. It's not worth it, really. So not worth it to me, anyway. So.
Unfortunately, not. And I suppose I should be. I'm looking for all ways to grind VC at the moment, but it's I just can't with that particular one. I'll take my chances with the daily spin, maybe. But congratulations to EA on that. And if you want to get into NBA Live Mobile, get download it. Of course, it is free to play. And yeah, you can get the free 2001 Allen Iverson card just for logging in. It's the free gift to celebrate the most downloaded. So. Good stuff. Patch 106 has dropped for NBA 2K19. That was the other one, of course, that you got to download, Kenny, when you got home. All that download limit, all that bandwidth going to all the patches that you got. 2K hasn't been releasing patches quite as often as Live, but they're usually fairly substantial each and every time. Looking over the notes, a lot of them are just fixing strange issues that are happening this time. There was not a lot of... they're not mentioning a lot of tuning, but always in the bottom of the notes they say many other small bug fixes and adjustments were also made game-wide. And that always kind of bugs me, and it's the same thing with Live, because Live's notes are sometimes not very specific either, that I wish they'd go in more into detail, because they'll say, oh, well, we haven't adjusted any shots or anything, but then something seems different about the game. Not so much this time, but I wish they'd go into a bit more detail as opposed to just plus a lot of other things.
I like what you did there. You said it bugs you. I thought that was very clever.
I didn't even mean that, but I'm pleased that I...
But yeah, it kind of annoys me too, because you don't know what's being fixed, and you kind of... It has like a psychosomatic kind of... It affects you because you're wondering, oh, this seems a little different, but is it?
Yeah.
And you just don't know for sure because... like, for example, when I was playing my league, I just noticed that my defense was really flimsy, like my team's overall defense. I was like, oh, I really hope that's not something that they quote-unquote fixed.
Yeah.
If they did it intentionally to make it represent, like, the real NBA at the moment, then that's kind of genius, but I don't like it.
Well, they have updated the playbooks recently. And that's been kind of controversial, and there's an article over on OS talking about it, I believe it was OS, and pointing out that while it is great for authenticity of the playbooks, and because they've reduced the amount of plays for certain teams, for example, the Rockets aren't running any post-up plays at the moment, so they've been taken out of the Rockets playbook. But if you want to play the Rockets a different way, or if you make a trade in my league, do you have to then go and get... You have to get rid of D'Antoni, do you have to bring in another playbook? Because you can't really have that flexibility that you used to have. So it's kind of positive and negative about what they've done with the playbooks, and I guess it might have affected defense as well if that's the case, but I don't know if that actually affects a My League already in progress.
It just seemed to me that the defense was a bit flimsy now. I don't know whether that's because I started with the Denver Nuggets before they were kind of recognized as one of the better defensive teams in the league, but... Yeah, it just seemed that none of my contests were really doing much. I don't know. It might just be like a slider tuning thing I need to do.
I know Live obviously have made those adjustments to contesting logic. I think 2K might have done some similar adjustments as well. There's also now, have you noticed the indicator down the bottom that shows how heavily you contest a shot?
Not really.
It'll come up. It'll actually show you. I mean, obviously, when you shoot, it gives you. You can have the shot feedback that tells you how heavily you were contested. But when you contest a shot, it'll also come up red or yellow in your icon to see what to show whether you how well you actually contested the shot, whether you actually smothered them or not.
Yeah, I'll keep an eye on that, but I guess I've never really noticed that. I guess I kind of thought that it was just, you know, a feature that was already there, but
it could be. I've seen it pointed out recently, and that's when I just noticed it. So maybe it has been, and they're just drawing attention to it. But that is definitely something to look out for. That says under in the latest patch notes, they've improved AI defensive switch logic for inbounds and pick and roll cases. Certainly in my career, my teammates still are really not doing well on the pick and roll defense, so I don't think that's really effectively fixed those switching logic, to be honest. I think that's one of the biggest weaknesses with the defense, which is why the defense feels so sloppy this year. And like you say, maybe it's unintentional brilliance because the defense has been so weak in the real NBA this year that it's a sim by accident, but it is frustrating when your teammates just don't switch properly on the pick and roll, especially.
Yeah, I find that they're a bit late to react still, as far as like switching just in general. I know lately I've been going for a few more steals, which means me kind of jumping out of like my usual defensive role and going after the point guard, and that usually leaves like the guy I'm defending wide open for a dunk. But I don't know, I would have thought there would have been like a switching process for that. Maybe that's just something I need to cut out of my game.
I may also need to do that. Something that the X, our good friend the X, suggested was to turn on the teammate, or maybe you suggested it was to turn on the teammate communication that gives you. So that might be something. I don't think I've actually done that, so I might need to try that and just see whether it gives me a bit more of a heads up of what my teammates are looking to do on the switch and on pick and roll defense. So I might give that a try. They fixed a couple of bugs in Pro-Am and matchmaking improvements. Of course, one of the improvements that they haven't made is switching back to the minimum of three to play, so that still makes it hard to play Pro-Am or even the Jordan Rec Center. So I've got a feeling they're not going to do it. And I wrote an article about this, and it really bugs me to see people in the community supporting that and excusing the whole idea and making things, oh, do you want to play against the CPU? Play my career? No, we just want to get a game, and AI players, for better or worse, do let you get to play a game. And yeah, I really wish they'd make that change, because it's made the mode more elitist, so much less accessible. And if you're trying to promote the 2K League, locking people out of Pro-Am, I don't think is a good way to go.
It isn't, and I have a feeling that they'll bring it back next year, kind of like the way that they brought back the free haircuts. So, yeah, it's disappointing it's not in this game, but I'm hoping that it's not going to be consistent across the next few games.
Definitely, and as much as it would annoy me that it's brought back as a feature after being taken out, at least they would have listened to the feedback. I still think, because I understand why people don't want to play with AI players, but it's funny because I saw someone on Reddit say, oh, you must really suck. Oh, no, it was Twitter. You must really suck if you want to be carried by the AI. And I'm like, if you've ever played Pro-Am with an AI teammate, they do not carry you. Not very often anyway. We know that for a fact. If anything, whenever we had the two AI players and we came up against a team of five, I certainly always felt it a disadvantage because they actually had five people that could play well.
I mean, we all know that Kobe was carried by Kwame Brown, so maybe that person was onto something.
Smush Parker.
I mean, they were essentially AI players for the Lakers teams for that era, so, you know.
ouch. But, yeah, it is something I hope they bring back. Maybe even if they wanted to bring it back around about the time of the league to get people into it, one thing that I would suggest, because I do understand that people don't want AI players in there, is to have either make sure that players, full teams don't get matched up with players that have less than full squads, or have, much like Rocket League, and I bring up Rocket League a lot because I think they do it really well, have the casual and competitive setting where you can play, and the casual setting is more of that social league. Sure, the stats attract, it's competitive and everything, but you do have the AI players. And then you have the competitive setting, which is the ultra-competitive, five players only, elites, get good, you know, top tier, whatever, you know, kind of thing. The ultra-serious mode of it. Just, I think there's a way you could cater to both crowds, and it's a shame that they are trying to cozy up to the elitists, really, and indulge in a bit of gatekeeping, because it's, I mean, that's 2K's issue has always been that it's never been quite as accessible as Live, but it's been more accessible than this. And it is a shame that they're making it less accessible for a majority of the fan base. I mean, they talk about a lot of people, how many people buy the game and how many people are playing the game, but then they lock a lot of people out of a popular game mode.
It is a shame, and I think that it's definitely a misstep in this game. As far as 2K19 is concerned, I think that it has been an excellent game, definitely a return to form.
Agreed.
But, I don't understand this move because, as you said, it kind of does take the mode away from people who just want to play with their friends. And, I don't understand all the arguments, you know, about AI players because the AI players were never, I mean, save a few like freakish moments that they've had every now and then, like
yep.
with what, the 400 or so games we played in 2K17, there may be a handful of moments where you're like, wow, the AI actually did that.
Yeah, they took a shot when we wanted them to shoot, or they didn't shoot when it was not a good idea to shoot. They got a rebound. They got a cheap steal for us. You know, it's.
I mean, I guess this. They did get a few like cheap steals, like as far as like passing lanes and stuff were concerned. But I mean,
it doesn't
just be a better passer, maybe.
Yeah,
like it's not a huge issue, really.
Considering how overpowered sharpshooters are online, it really doesn't balance out. Also, because AI are not very good at defending sharpshooters either. I found they just sort of don't rotate properly. So if you can beat the AI in that respect, you get an open shot every time. And with a sharpshooter, that's money online. So
yeah,
but I'm not confident they're going to add it. It really seems like something they would have added by now. But we'll see. And if they do, I'm sure we'll get some more pro-am games in. Although we might have five at some point now. We might even have six people playing the game, so we might even have an alternate at some stages to play. So we might actually get to play with our squad yet. We might get to play with logos and not randoms with the don't pass us the ball or take a lot of shots, because that's not always fun.
No, it's not fun at all. But hopefully we can get a few games with the NLC logo.
Oh, it's worth a shot. We just need to find out when we get to Elite, because that happened kind of randomly in 2K17.
Yeah, it really did. So are the rules the same, do you know, in 2K19? Can we get a logo before then, or...?
I think it's got to be Elite still. We haven't played a single squad game yet, so we're not actually sure how it all goes and whether they've changed it. But they're not really any more forthcoming with the information, if that's what you mean. Certainly not.
Yeah, so, true.
Unfortunately.
I guess we'll find out sooner or later.
Hopefully. Worth a shot. I wrote another article this week about the in-universe value, actually it was the week before, in-universe value of VC, NBA 2K19 edition. This is something I did last year as well, working out via the salary of the displayed in my career how much the VC is worth. And last year I found out that one VC was equal to $29, which means that your average T-shirt is about $17,000 in-universe. This is 600 VC. This year, it's actually some interesting discoveries this time, because there's no constant value of VC, because if you for a contract of 500 VC, I worked out that the salary is now $104.63, so let's call it $105 for one VC when you've got a 500 VC contract. So about more than 3.5 times last year's value, which means a T-shirt is now around $63,000 for one T-shirt in the universe of the neighborhood. And here's the interesting thing, though, is that if you have a higher contract, say 1,000 VC, it actually has a different value. If you work out the amount of the contract, it doesn't scale like it. Doesn't scale consistently, except that one VC is worth about $300 the higher you go with the salary. But again, that makes the really weird situations with the in-universe value, Kenny. Shirts being, headbands, for example, will cost you $308,000 if in-universe dollars. So it's T-shirt, one VC is equivalent to $308 with a salary of 1,000 VC, which works out to be $25.23 million, counting against the cap. So they've got these really weird values, and you've got this really weird situation where VC has both an in-universe value and a meta value to the gamer, and it's trying to balance things out, and it's, yeah, when you work out the math, it's kind of funny.
I guess it's just something that maybe they haven't taken into account. I don't know, would they have somebody who would scale that, or it does seem pretty arbitrary, doesn't it?
I found out it's consistent with the amounts. So 500 VC will always be worth the same amount of in-universe dollars, and 1,000 VC will always be in the same amount of in-universe dollars, etc. But it scales differently according to what the VC is worth in-universe dollars as it gets higher up. And as a result, if you work out what that actually would be for the prices of the items in dollars in the game world, yeah, shoes and everything being worth over millions of dollars in some respects. I think I found, seeing if I've got some, top shelf Nikes, over $1 million, $1.386 million.
Wow. That's, I'm lucky I got all my shoes in the pre-order bonus, because I'm no way in hell I'm paying that.
And this is, again, where I think the daily spin is really good, because you can actually get items. If you want to outfit your player, getting some free clothing just so you can avoid the generic brown shirt and grey sweatpants. If you want to change up the player, or especially if you want to get some shoes, because I got the Jordan deal and I actually then got some Jordan shoes off the spin across all modes. So yeah. I didn't have to actually then go out and buy shoes for Playground and Pro-Am. So I was really happy about that.
The spin thing's a bit weird to me though, because I actually won a free tattoo on the spin, and it wasn't like a tattoo I could pick. So it ended up just being the letter N. So
yes.
I was like, okay, what am I going to do with the letter N? Do I buy like the K, the E, another N and a Y? Like, so I ended up just putting it on my player's leg. So, somewhere where it could kind of be seen, but maybe interpreted as like maybe another kind of tattoo, but yeah, I found that to be a bit odd.
I think I got the free 2K logo tattoo this year, just to get the trophy basically, and I shrunk it down as small as I could and put it under my sock, so you can't actually see my player's ink, but it's there. He's got some he's got the tough stickers on him, so to speak. So. But I do like what they've done with the wheel. I know Ben and I kind of scoffed at it during the preview season, but I've got VC a couple of times, which has been nice. But and even just to get some clothing, just to outfit your player, I've even got my NBA bands. That's how I happened to get them randomly, I think. I can't remember buying them from the NBA store, but just getting some things to wear around the neighborhood. I got a Richard Jefferson throwback Nets jersey, actually.
Oh, that's cool. So yeah.
That's just, you know, just something else to wear on the playground. It's just kind of fun. I think it's good. Even if you get the My Points, you get even getting fans, because that can push you closer to getting the next endorsement deal. So
yep.
I'm actually quite happy with the wheel spin. And it's interesting to do it both on, because I've got the game on both PC and PS4 to do that and actually see if I can, what I get on each spin. And I got a James Harden throwback on the PC version, so it's just getting different things on both platforms has been kind of interesting to see how that works out. See how my luck goes on each platform. Same with my team, where my team on PS4 I've got some better rewards, I think, because I got the Jordan card on PS4. So I think that automatically makes the PS4 the winner this year for us. Well, anytime you don't get 100 MT on a locker code, basically is a good day in my team, I think.
Yeah, I think the daily wheel adds another element of excitement to the mode, so I really enjoy it. I know going to the wheel is something that it's an enjoyable part of the experience, so I really like it, yeah. I don't know.
It's just an extra activity to do, make something else to do each day. Something I've also been doing, because I've been trying to grind for VC, I've been determined not to buy any this year. I'm up to 73 overall. But I've been doing the daily trivia, and it really bugs me when I get one wrong, and I think, oh, of course it was that one. but I saw someone the other day. Did I share I think I shared on our social media, on the NLSC social media. got down to the second last question, and it whittled it down to one person. I thought, okay, this is going to be interesting. And they actually won it. So the jackpot of $500,000 went to one person, apparently. That was a big win for whoever got that. I mean, I wonder whether it was just like, if everyone gets eliminated, it just says one person's left, and that's just like the game, the CPU, and just saying that there is a winner. I'm not sure whether everyone's ever been completely eliminated and no one gets the jackpot. But if somebody did actually win that, that is a big prize to get. 500,000 BC.
Massive. Like, you wouldn't have to... aside from the cap breakers, I suppose you'd have to, like, play My Career Again. But, yeah, that would pretty much cover you up to, like, at least, like, 1995 or something like that. That'd be cool.
Well, I worked it out. I've got a new My Career game, just a new save, just to for content, basically, so that I can, if I need to look up what it's like at the beginning again. I'm not going to play it. It's just a second one. But it costs about 190,000 VC to get from the 60 to the initial cap of 85.
Okay.
So...
sounds about right.
And it was about the same last year, because I thought it went up this year, but it is actually about the same as last year. And again, for an 85 cap, it is up from 2K17, where about 150,000 got you to 88 overall out of the box. So, and then, of course, you have to keep working on the cap breakers to get through the extra buckets, the extra put in the buckets. So it the value has... you now have to pay more to get less... on the cap, basically. It is more expensive to get less of a boost at the start, a smaller cap. Yeah. But it's not actually... I thought they'd upped it from last year, but it isn't actually as expensive. It's at least around about the same. It hasn't increased. So they haven't actually increased the prices of upgrades. So it was worth going back and checking that out. So I got to give them credit for that. As much as I think the 2K can be a push towards microtransactions, as I wrote about in this week's Friday 5, cheap plug... it doesn't seem that they've actually increased the value of upgrades, or they might have higher up, but at least from that initial 60 to 85 is about the same as last year. So, yeah, I have to give them that.
I find that cap breaker kind of helps it not be a completely pay to win process as well, because I know I'm at 90 overall at the moment, and I've kind of got a surplus of VC that I don't know what to do with. So you can't just like buy your VC and then, you know, go all the way to like 95. You have to actually, you know, play the game in order to get those cap breakers. So I actually quite like that part of the game. I think it was something that needed to be brought in.
Yeah, and of course they started out with 2K17, where you could only get to 88 on day one until you started getting you were doing work, as we were back in the day, and filling that meter. And then every so often that would actually get all the way to the overall doing work would get all the way to the next cap breaker. I think it's a good way, absolutely, that you can only pay to get a certain height. Of course, that can still give you a tremendous advantage on day one, but there is the limit there. And of course, you're still going to grind for badges. And badges are a little bit easier to grind for this year, because I'm already at gold halfway through the season.
Yeah, I've... I think I've got like one or two Hall of Fame badges at the moment, so it's not too much of a grind at the moment. There are a few badges that I think are going to be super grindy, but that's only because, like, for my archetype, for example, the charge card badge is one that can go all the way up to Hall of Fame, I think, and I couldn't even tell you what I should say is I've never actually taken a charge in game before, so it's going to be really hard for me to do that in game. So going into the practice gym is the only way I can really get that badge to Hall of Fame. And, you know, maximum amount of points you can get is 700. You have to do that, like, I don't know, something like 40 times in order to get it up to the next level. I think maybe it's silver. I don't know the exact math for it, but that's a lot of training drills. So absolutely. I guess,
and they nerfed that after the first week or so as well, so
yeah, you can only do a number of drills per day before you can play your next game. I noticed that when I was playing my career before, because I started doing more of the drills so I could get my badges up a bit.
It used to give more points each time as well, more XP. and they, they cut that down. I think people were reaching the badges too quickly, and that they were trying to, they were trying to even it out with online, but now online actually gives more. So I'm not too thrilled about that. I think they need to rebalance that. It's funny that you mentioned not taking a charge in game though, because I got the charge card badge and by doing the drills, and then I tried. Tried taking a charge in-game in my career, and it was the first time in all my years of playing my career that I actually got a charging call. You know, and I suppose I'm playing point guard, so it's not as you don't get as much as when you're playing as a big, but I actually got a charge on Chris Paul. I flopped against Chris Paul. the irony, right? But yeah, and I actually got it. I'm like, oh, wow, you know, I actually, you know, the charge card popped up. I'm like, oh, that was actually worth getting to the bronze charge card. I actually got a charge in-game. I was... I was kind of excited about it, actually. It was, you know, it actually worked. It was fantastic.
Well, my player is 7'3", so the temptation to go for the block is always there. So I guess that's why I've never taken a charge in game. But as many people would know, I took a lot of charges, not necessarily recognized as charges, in 2K17. So
that's the old it's the old Kenny play along the baseline, a lot of the foul calls, yeah.
Fantastic. Well, not just that, but like, remember when centers used to like go full on turbo and they used to hit the charge and
yes, we got some that helped us win some games. Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of people were very shitty about that, to be honest.
Oh, I got some abuse about that, but yeah, I'm glad that's out of the game now. That's that was a really cheap tactic, even though it was very successful.
So. We'll talk a little bit more about what we've been playing this week, but while we wrap up the news portion of the NLSC podcast, episode number 267, of course, an article came out fairly recently about the future of college sports games, because there's a college football, that is a gridiron game, coming out, and they're basically getting around it, Kenny, by having fictional, not just fictional players, but also fictional schools, because it's difficult to get the NCAA license in the wake of the Ed O'Bannon trial, the Ed O'Bannon suit. The article talks about how there's some misconceptions about how the lawsuit prevented college games coming out, and saying how that's kind of not true, because there's nothing in place that says that a college game can't be made. But I think that's kind of splitting hairs, because obviously the lawsuit made it a lot more difficult for a licensed game to happen. So I think it's, again, kind of splitting hairs. And I'm not blaming Ed O'Bannon, because I think he was absolutely right to to say that they were basically using his image without giving him credit, or just because he didn't have his name on it. But I think it's naive to say that that lawsuit didn't set a precedent and set an awareness that has made it hard for college games to come out. So it is interesting that they're actually finding a way to do it with a college game that can possibly be edited and putting your own assets in there, and makes you wonder if it'll happen with an NBA, with a basketball game as well.
It is kind of interesting that that game is coming out with fictional teams and players. I'd be interested in something like that just for basketball, but yeah, whether or not it is viable from a marketing standpoint is another thing, but yeah, I always felt a bit weird about the NCAA. So, yeah, I think if I had like an NCAA game that had like player likenesses, and knowing that they weren't getting paid for it, I wouldn't really want to play the game, because I already feel iffy about supporting college hoops for that reason.
Yeah, I mean, that is the whole thing, that they don't want the college. They don't make money off the college athletes, but they don't get any kind of compensation for it, because it would jeopardize their amateur status, but they'll still make a bunch of money off them. It's never it's definitely not really on the level, and the lawsuit I think has definitely affected that, and again, rightfully so. I cannot fault Ed O'Bannon for taking legal action the way he did. I mean, they even had a player who was wearing number 31, 6'8", 222 pounds, using a left-handed shot and playing power forward, with his ratings, and kind of looked like him but wasn't him. I mean, certainly EA was skirting what was legal at the time, and obviously, in fact, stepped over that line.
I think another layer to this as well is that Ed O'Bannon didn't really have a successful NBA career. He kind of flamed out within, like, what was it, two or three seasons, maybe?
Pretty much, yeah.
So, you know, it's not like he had much of an opportunity to kind of make money off his name or off his likeness. So for somebody to use it in a college game, yeah, it really wasn't on the level.
But with that in mind, I mean, would it be appropriate to pay college players some kind of fee that would obviously go to tuition or whatnot, or you know, whatever they want to spend it on, I suppose, but logically spending it on college loans and everything would be a smart idea, especially if, for those who don't go on to play professionally. It just seems wrong that schools make all this money, and this is obviously goes beyond video games, but they make so much money off these student-athletes and yet still find a way that they don't pay them. And it always makes me kind of look side-eyed at people that say, oh, the college game is all squeaky clean and all above board and so much better and purer than the NBA. And I mean, the NBA's got its problems, but at least it's pretty open about the way money changes hands, if nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something I've had a problem with for years, I think, with the college system, is the fact that, you know, college players really struggle. Like, they have to work different jobs along with training. They have to, you know, study for their classes, no matter how farcical they might be. I mean, we all know about the Ben Simmons situation where he, you know, wasn't actively engaged in college. Surprise, surprise, because he was the next big thing, and it really wasn't like, you know, him studying was so secondary that he had like some academic probation or something like that, something similar to Derrick Rose,
something like that. Yeah, and it's
so, yeah. I would like to think that they could get something out of the college experience, because you know it might work out for the colleges. Say you have someone like, you know, you have an amazing athlete like a Zion Williamson. He has no incentives to stay on for a second year because he's going to blow up in the NBA and get a huge paycheck. But if, say, like, if they could get paid for their likenesses in like a video game or for their jerseys or something like that, maybe they would feel more inclined to stay on for a few more years, develop their game, and then go to the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, by all means, don't have a salary, you know, don't make it a job, but at least let them have some kind of royalties.
Yeah, for lack of a absolutely. Better term.
I think that would be appropriate. And like you say, it would encourage people to stay on. It's a lot of people just going there because you can't come straight out of high school anymore. That might change with the G League moving forward, possibly, that people will go straight to the G League if they change that. In which case, you wonder what will happen to college basketball if people can just go to a semi-pro or a minor league, like a developmental league, where they can earn money straight away.
I hope it really shakes up the system, because it really needs to be shaken up. And I really like the idea of players being able to go to the G League or even the NBL. I mean, Terrence Ferguson did it, and he was a lottery pick, wasn't he? Or he was like fairly close to it.
I think so.
From
yeah.
memory, yeah. So, unless somebody really wants to get themselves an education, which, you know, spoiler alert, a lot of these top prospects aren't really there for that. Yeah, I think other ways to kind of get around it, I would look into that. Like, you know, say being able to go to the EuroLeague and getting paid for a year, that, and like experiencing a different culture, I'd prefer that over the, like, not getting paid to go to an American college.
I mean, Brandon Jennings, I think, was one of the trailblazers in that respect, going out to, yeah. to Europe. And perhaps his career is not the best example of a huge success story in the NBA, but that's a whole different matter of making it. But as far as being able to get to the NBA in the first place, it's a way to go. 21st overall pick in 2017 was Ferguson.
So fairly close.
First round. And, obviously. So that's definitely something that needs to happen, I think, with the college system. Totally agree. As far as college sports games, I would like the idea of a customizable college game, even if it doesn't have any original realistic assets that we could update ourselves, especially if it's on PC, because I'm sure that it would have a lot more flexibility. But like you say, anything that doesn't have a license is always a tougher sell.
Yeah, definitely. I think, I don't know, I wouldn't mind a college game. I'd probably buy it if one was out, but at the same time, it's not something I'm totally like railing for. Like it would be a nice added bonus, I guess.
Absolutely. Always room on the market for something different, as we know from Basketball Classics, of course, and NBA 2K Playgrounds 2. Still a very awkward name to say, the way they've done that. But nevertheless, so definitely for it if it happens. But yeah, it could be a tough sell. But we'll have to see, because maybe this opens the door. We can only wait but see.
Only time will tell.
Indeed. Speaking of time, this is a very rough segue, I will admit, but that's what I do on the NLC podcast. But speaking of time, we have been spending time with basketball video games. Aha. So it is time to talk about our week in basketball gaming.
Alley-oop! Oh, what a play!
It looks simple, but it's hard to execute.
You're back to the virtual hardwood, Kenny, and I know that you're chasing some records at the moment.
So I'm second in blocks. The second in the season tally. I've actually broken the single game record before. I have a few single game records in my career. Still feels weird to say my career. It was like a double up, but
Whether it's on the podcast or whether I'm writing in an article, it never really seems right.
my player, it's weird. So I have the points, blocks, and I have the assist record as well. I can't remember what the exact number was, but definitely eclipsed Skiles' mark. So I think what I need to do now is I need to get 57 blocks in my remaining 16 games. So it sounds like a lot, but I'm averaging 6 a game, so if I keep on that pace, I should be able to get it.
So, sorry, you said 16 games left?
Yeah, 16 games left in the regular season.
Well, at that average, that's 96 more blocks. So, on that pace, you will actually get it, yeah. You'll eclipse it quite comfortably, actually.
So, Mark Eaton holds that mark. I just eclipsed Minute Bowl, I believe.
You're eating up that record, eating up the blocks, you might say. I also passed a record. I also beat the assist record. I only had the 31. I just beat it by one and then got subbed out with 2 minutes left. Thank you, Fred Hoiberg, for that one, for not letting me pad the stats even more, unfortunately. Possibly if I'd shot less, because I also had 19 points in that game, so if I'd barely shot at all, I might have been able to get a few more assists on that one. Or if the Bulls had a few more confident scorers, just throwing that out there. Thank you. Thank you, Garpax. But I got the 31 assists, and as you probably noticed when it happens, you actually get the pop-ups, the overlays that mention that you're climbing up the list, that you're now tied for fifth and fourth in the single-game record, and it actually will come up on the big screen, comes up, NBA history made, and they acknowledge it in the commentary, and there's even the post-game interview with David Aldridge talked about it, and I'm not sure if it was in 2K18, because I didn't play enough of my career, I just didn't like it last year, is for reasons that I've mentioned far too many times on the show. But I don't know if it was in last year. Definitely wasn't in 2K17, because I played a lot of that and had some really ridiculous records in that. I had a 40 assist game, and they didn't mention it. I thought that was really cool, and it's just one of those things about the presentation that makes you feel locked into the game, and it goes back to what we were talking about earlier with the presentation earlier in the show. Just really cool.
Yeah, I really like it. It makes me pay attention more to the presentation, knowing that it's there, knowing that you can kind of have a big game and that they will acknowledge it. That's always cool. Like that's one thing I think 2K definitely has over Live at the moment, is that even though Live has dynamic commentary, the commentary in 2K feels more dynamic. So, yeah.
It mentions what's going on in the game and what's been happening in the past few games. Like they'll have overlays that show what's been happening, pop-ups that come up, what's been happening, you know, the rookie leaders over the last 10 games and things like that. It just does make you feel more locked in, and the idea that you are actually playing in the NBA, and the NBA has this rich history with all the records and everything, as I said before. I just think it's really cool, and I wasn't expecting it, and I saw it, and sort of coming up, and it really got me excited. Like, oh, you know, I'm gunning for it. I'm going to go for this record because I want to see what happens if, you know, when they acknowledge it. And it was the really cool overlay, and it flashed up to the big screen, and it came up you know, new assist record and everything. And then the post-game interview, which I really wasn't expecting. I just thought it was just going to be a generic, oh, you had a great game, you were really passing the ball around tonight, but it actually said, how do you feel about breaking Scott Skull's record? And yeah, that's a lot of attention to detail that really made the experience.
It's just a shame that you can't capture the video with sound, because that would just, it would be a cool thing to be able to like upload to your YouTube channel and kind of, you know, have it for retrospective articles even. Like, it would just be so definitely cool to be able to do that.
I'll have to maybe have to try for it again, because it happened kind of organically that I was getting that high. So I have to mm-hmm. try it again. I'll have to break out the Elgato and see if I can capture it with the audio. But yeah, I wish they'd re-enable that audio, because it is a lot easier to just do it with a PS4 capture. Just quicker,
yeah,
and easier.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I'm guessing it must be due to music licensing or something like that.
Possibly. I noticed that a lot of my NBA 2K16 videos, they were kind of getting like claims from artists, like not like
strikes,
not like strikes or anything, but they were just monetizing my videos. So,
yeah, I've noticed that too. Yeah, so I actually had to, because I recently uploaded the intros, NBA Live 18 intro, to the video, and it got blocked worldwide because it's got the song. So I actually had to upload a version where it's, it says EA Sports is in the game and has the audio of Embiid dunking, and then I had to cut the sound when the song starts to actually get it
up
on the YouTube without it being blocked worldwide. Didn't get a copyright strike, but basically said, you know, this can't be uploaded, this can't be shown mm-hmm. worldwide. So yeah, there's obviously it's obviously a concern, but you'd think they could maybe change the audio channel, because it does actually record the sound for the buzzer, for the shot clock buzzer and end of quarter buzzer and things like that, the beeping.
Oh, really?
It does.
I didn't notice that.
It does record that. Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
Because you notice that also comes through the controller as well, so that must be on a different channel. So you'd think they'd be able to filter out the music and just have like commentary and at least the court sounds. I think it just not even being able to hear the you know, the dunking, you know, when you dunk, have a big dunk or something, and it's just all quiet. You don't even hear you don't hear swishes. You don't hear the rim clanking around as it's being swung around on it or anything. So if they could just do that, that would be really great. But it probably is for that reason, I would imagine, for copyright reasons.
Yeah, I'd say so.
So that was, I mean, grinding up, I'm 73 overall, as I said. You're 90, did you say?
Yeah, I managed to get 90 a few days ago. So I noticed that I passed the All-Star weekend, and you actually don't get any My Points for the Rookie Challenge.
Okay.
So I felt a little cheated by. Do you get
BC?
Yeah, I think so. You get My Points, though, for the All-Star game. The dunk contest, which I was in, is still a farcical mess.
Oof.
So, who was it? Marcus Young, like your antagonist in the story.
Yep.
He had this really weird dunk where the ball came away from his hand and kind of swung into the rim by itself. I don't know. I'm on the side of like maybe not including the dunk contest if they can't get a workable version of it. Because those things just really kind of, they break the immersion, and I don't know. I don't see the point of having a dunk contest unless you can actually have it as like a standalone mode that you can kind of practice in as well.
Agreed. It's overdue to bring something like that out, like having a proper All-Star weekend mode. Live did it for a few years there, and it was great, as you know. And we really missed it when it went to when it was gone in Live 10 and beyond. 2K at least has something there with the three-point shootout and the dunk contest, but it'd be nice to play them at any time, if nothing else to practice, because the dunk contest in particular is very contrived and convoluted. I don't think any game has ever done the dunk contest quite as well as Live.
Yeah, so my best experience of the dunk contest was Live 06 on PC. That's like the classic. Only time that I found the dunk contest to be playable. Definitely, I've never had like a playable experience in 2K as far as the dunk contest is concerned. The three-point contest, it's okay, but obviously, like with my build, I didn't get into it this year.
I'm currently second in voting for that, so it looks like I'll be competing. So,
cool. the best 3-point contest I experienced was in NBA Live 98. So,
very classic.
There's yet to be a game that has surpassed that, which is kind of sad considering that it's 20 years old.
That was the first time we had the 3-point shootout in Live. That was really awesome. The worst 3-point shootout for me is NBA All-Star Challenge on the Super Nintendo. I did a Way Back Wednesday on that one. It's
all right, yeah.
You got to press the shoot button to jump and then shoot it again and then press it again when you're at the top of the jump. So it's not a hold and release. It's a press once and then press twice to release. Yeah, it's not good. Basically, it hasn't held up very well. It has horse in it as well, but again, it's the same shooting mechanics, so it's very frustrating. Here's the question about the dunk contest. Marquese Chris, was he in it this year? Because was it your
not game? Only was he in it, but I think he won it.
Again, he's like an 8-time champion now, isn't he? I mean, across all the games, it's.
I'm pretty sure it was Marquese Chris who won it, but I'll have to double check.
Has he ever competed in real life in a dunk contest, an NBA contest?
I don't think so, and I don't know. I'll have to check, and it's weird.
Because I know he was winning all those. It was your 2K17 My League, wasn't it, that he was in?
Yeah, he definitely won one in the My League at some point, because I remember his name pretty much purely for that. So,
Wikipedia does not mention any participation in the dunk contest, so I'm guessing he hasn't actually. So.
I mean, he's kind of like a fringe player on the league these days, isn't he?
Pretty much.
I mean, I guess that doesn't stop you from being a dunk contest champ, but.
Kenny Walker? Kenny Skywalker?
Yeah, that's true.
Among others, Jamie Watson, a competitor in 95, not a winner. Harold Miner, a 2-time winner, you know, four-year career.
So maybe that's something that's going for him as far as like being a dunk contest champ.
That's how you get back in the league, yeah. Did you see Jeremy Evans got back in the league last year with the Hawks briefly?
Did he? He was in the NBL, wasn't he? I'm pretty sure he was in the NBL for a short stint. Maybe it was another Jeremy. Jeremy Evans. Because I'm pretty sure I went to like a NBL game and he was injured. And somebody was like, oh, you know, maybe it was like the Sydney Kings or something. Maybe I'm thinking of a different Jeremy.
Just check Wikipedia. It doesn't seem to be him. Might be a different Jeremy. But he did. He played in Europe. But he also had a short stint with. Both the Erie BayHawks and the Atlanta Hawks last season. So, yeah, he actually showed up after a few years out of the league, and back with the Hawks last year.
Huh.
But now he's back with back in the EuroLeague at the moment. But yeah,
just for a follow up. It was Jeremy Tyler, not Jeremy.
Jeremy Tyler, right. That rings a bell. One game with the Atlanta Hawks last year, 5 minutes, made one shot.
Okay. Yeah. Good for him.
So as far as NBA Live is concerned, I did play the live events. Have you played any of the solo events yet? Because I've added those for the live events where you don't actually have to team up with anyone. It's quite refreshing not to have to play with randoms, actually.
I haven't played that yet. My experiences with NBA Live, I had a couple of games with the WNBA Play Now, and I also played a bit of the World Tour for the One. I managed to like 100% the court in the Philippines, so I ended up recruiting LeBron James to my team. Oh, nice. And a few other goodies from that. So I think I've got a few more courts to go on that before I've got 100% on the mode. I think anyway. The last court's probably Rucker Park. That's the last one I have like in my queue. So I'm guessing. Rucker Park kind of makes sense for like a last court.
It does. It's sort of the main event, so to speak, the final boss battle, I suppose.
Yeah.
Have you been playing court battles at all?
I did a little bit before I left, but I haven't gotten back to it. So yeah, that's that was pretty fun. I noticed that there are a few interesting little rules that you can add in there. For example, One person I played against had a rule where I needed two WNBA players on my team, which I thought was a bit strange. And then like the rule was that dunks were more than you know, normal shots, and I was like, okay, that's that was done purposefully. But yeah, it's something I'm sure I'll get back into at some point. I just at the moment I've just been playing a bit more 2K.
I've been playing a lot of 2K because I've been grinding up my player recently. And I think that is the problem with Live, that it doesn't have the depth of the modes to really keep us hooked, like a franchise mode.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it really needs to keep us hooked, for those of us that really like the NBA side of things, at least. I asked because I took your court, so you owe me for that one. You owe me some, you owe me some payback. I was just trying to get to the next court tier, and I was basically going through all the friends list and saying, okay, whose court haven't I done? X's CPU team beat me on a buzzer beater. I was so sore. I was winning, and yeah, because he had the what's his rule again, but it was one that favored his team. He put it together. It was a really good defensive campaign for him, and he actually, it was the first time I'd actually failed to win on a court battle. I've lost my court to other people when my defensive team hasn't defended it, but it was the first time of me playing a game that I lost it, and I was damn you, X, that was well played with that defensive chess match there, because the rule really did favor you. And yeah, no, it was I think it's a really good concept, and I've enjoyed it more than I thought I would when I heard about it. But again, I just want to see more NBA oriented stuff in NBA Live, because it is, after all, NBA Live.
I think it's a fun little mode, but not exactly one that I could play for like hours on end. So I think that's just a general thing with NBA Live at the moment, is that its last ability is kind of not where it needs to be.
Agreed, across the board. But
yeah,
hopefully moving forward, certainly, again, we're throwing out those suggestions to the developers, and hopefully they will, hopefully it will actually make an impact. Speaking of basketball games, Basketball Classics, I know you've played a little bit of that. I've been playing it as well. I played through the story mode, and I'm up to being able to try and beat the Phantom Five, and man, they are hard.
They are really hard. I played a bit of Basketball Classics on Steam when I was away, because like whenever I had like down moments downtime, I should say, in my hotel room, I would play games on Steam, and that just happened to be one of them. It's so much better to play with a controller. I was trying to play it with a keyboard, and it's such a better game with a controller. I'm up to the same stage as you are, and I can hang with them for maybe a couple of quarters, but then I just get blown out because I just don't know how to defend them.
They are really hard to defend. I'm still trying to work that out myself. Because there's some other teams to unlock after them, and one of them looks rather familiar.
Yeah, they do. Familiar jerseys, and do we want to give that away?
It's been mentioned on Twitter, so we might as well say it, yeah.
All right, cool. Yeah, we're in the game.
Yeah, we are in the game, yeah. After I did the interview with Josh and Dave on the NLC podcast a few shows back, I was giving them some feedback afterwards. We were chatting for a long time. Couple of great guys, as you can probably hear from the interview. A lot of fun talking to them and loving the game as well. And I said, I can pass along the NLC logo and stats for our Pro-Am squad if you'd like to put us in the game. And I'm just throwing it out there as, you know, if they treat it as kind of a joke, or if they're sort of not a keen, I can just laugh it off and, you know, kidding around. But they were so keen to do it. So I'm like, well, okay. Send along the assets, and that we are actually in the game. We have to be unlocked. But you got to get past the Phantom Five, and that's tough. But
really tough.
We've seen footage of us in action. However, they sent us along a preview when they were getting ready to push through that update with us in the game. It was just so cool to see our avatars and playing, and Valor hitting his mid-range shots, and you the three, and you went for a dunk, and they've got your players' tattoos on and everything. It's it's funny, because obviously we've been playing the games and putting ourselves in the games, but this is someone else putting us in their game. So it was just really cool to see.
Yeah, and it's something that will last as long as the game's around. So it's super cool, and it's something that I really want to unlock.
Yeah.
if anybody in the community has managed to unlock it, let me know how you ended up beating that team, because it is so hard. Like, it is like it is Dark Souls level hard.
It may be the virtual hardwood equivalent of Dark Souls, because they just hit every single shot.
Yeah, it's so hard to make them miss. And I thought I figured out a way, but then sure enough that they managed to blow me out. So, yeah.
Some old school Nintendo hard difficulty on that one, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it comes down to hitting some threes with Larry Bird. If you can outgun them, I think it feels like it might be that. If you can outgun them on threes, possibly.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah, chasing them off the three-point line might be the only way.
Like driving them inside for a dunk or whatever, and letting them take the 2 points, but then you take the three. Because once they just hit everything... I was surprised when they finally missed a shot. I was like, I thought they must have been programmed to hit every single shot. But apparently they can miss and can be blocked. It's just really, really hard to do so. But it's makes you want to try and get it done. Especially knowing that we can unlock ourselves to play with. It's going to be fun to... we'll have to beat ourselves then before we can play with our avatars.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun trying to unlock ourselves, I suppose. And it's definitely an incentive for me to dust off that old Steam account again.
And shout out once again to Josh and Dave for... being so open to the idea and our suggestions and doing the game, and it's really in such a really good state for an early access game. And I know there's a season mode coming and other cool stuff that they're doing. I think it's going to be a really good retro-themed basketball experience. It already is a lot of fun, but it sounds like it's going to get even better. I'm looking forward to what they do, and hopefully we can be a part of that moving forward, and if nothing else, we are in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope that it kind of builds up a nice little cult status, like a cult community. That would be cool, because it definitely deserves like a lot of recognition. It's a fun game to play, particularly when you have a controller, so I'd recommend anybody to pick it up, because it's a lot of fun to play, particularly if you like retro games.
Definitely. And the game we didn't know that we wanted or needed, the whole, because we see a lot of games have done it, Shovel Knight and all these other games that have gone for that old school aesthetic, but with new design techniques and the benefit of modern game design with an old school aesthetic, to actually do it with basketball. And I've done it, of course, with Jam games in recent years, and Playgrounds as well, to a certain extent, has that old Jam feel, kind of, sort of. But this old Double Dribble style of game, except way better than those old games ever were. It's very impressive. I'm so glad that they. You know, a couple of great guys like that have been able to fulfill their dream and hopefully just more and more success. And if we can play a part of that, I'm certainly happy to do it. And I've seen people actually streaming the game as well and putting stuff up on YouTube about it. So it's clearly resonating with some people. And it's, wish them all the success and glad to be in a small part of it. And obviously to be featured, very flattered to be in a game, even if I did push for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope the game has every success and... yeah, definitely check it out if you're into that.
So we'll wrap up as we usually do with a little bit of real NBA talk, and just to cover some of the top stories around the league at the moment, top results and whatnot. Weren't the Clippers supposed to fall off, Kenny?
Supposedly, but they're just going from strength to strength, and it kind of reminds me of the Nuggets post-Carmelo Anthony trade. You know, that team didn't have any notable stars on it, but... They had like some great success. Well, not great success, but they managed to continue like the success that they had with Carmelo Anthony for a while there. And it looks like the Clippers are kind of doing the same. And, you know, I guess two parallels you can draw between both those teams is that they both had Danilo Gallinari. So maybe he's the secret.
Apparently so. Of course, his former team, your team, your Nuggets, are right behind them currently in the West. Clippers 15-6, won four in a row, nine of their last 10. Nuggets have dropped off a little bit. They're 6-4 in their last 10, but they have won the last five, 15-7 to be second. They're ahead of the Oklahoma City Thunder. Golden State are 15-8 with Curry out. They've really dropped, so it's perhaps the most intriguing season in a long time, actually.
Yeah, it's there's definitely been a few curveballs out there as far as who the top teams are, who's performing, who's not performing, I suppose. I think I read that Klay Thompson's shooting a fairly low three-point percentage this year, like in the low 30s somewhere.
Which for him is, you know, quite low, yeah.
Yeah, that's really bad. You know, Gordon Hayward's kind of been a bit underwhelming, which I understand, like, he's coming off an injury, but he's kind of copping a bit of criticism for that because the Celtics aren't doing as well as people projected them to.
I mean, one win away from the finals last year, and they're 12-10 to start this season with, with a healthy squad. So I think that's definitely throw people for a loop. Raptors 19-4, best record in the league. Bucks 15-6, obviously great as well. Philadelphia's come on a bit strong, 16-8. Detroit 12-7.
Yeah, Detroit are doing really well. I'm glad you brought up the Raptors because there's one name I want to mention. That's Pascal Siakam. He won Eastern Conference Player of the Week while I was in America. So, yeah, that's not something I thought I would be saying this time last year, but Pascal Siakam might be a dark horse for the most improved player in the league.
Had himself a great game against the Warriors yesterday as well. When we were recording this, when they beat the Warriors in overtime, I think he had a career night.
Yeah, and he's just going from strength to strength, and you know, he's even developing kind of a three-point game, which I didn't think he would, but yeah, it's good to see.
When it comes to the three-pointers, I did like Greg Popovich's recent comments. It kind of summed up some of my complaints about the recent style of playing the NBA. But
yeah,
but that being said, because it is such a big part of the current NBA, any kind of extra skill you can develop in that regard with range on your jump shot, definitely the way to go. Charlotte is actually in the playoff picture at the moment. I mean, it's very early to say playoff picture, but they're in the top eight. Utah, I mean, the West has shuffled around a bit. The Lakers got off to that slow start, but now they've come forward. They're in they're sixth in the West, 13-9, won their last two. Utah got off to a really good start, but they've dropped.
Well, yeah, and in recent news, Kyle Korver has actually gone back to Utah in a trade. So the Jazz sent Alec Burks over to Cleveland for Kyle Korver, and which team got the picks? I think, was it Cleveland or Utah that got the picks? I can't remember.
Cleveland Cavaliers received Alec Burks. Cavs received draft consideration from the Utah Jazz. Utah Jazz received Kyle Korver from the Cavaliers. So it was the Cavs getting the picks.
Okay.
Future draft consideration.
It's kind of cool that Korver's gone back to the Jazz because the first basketball game I ever saw was the Clippers versus the Jazz, and Kyle Korver was like their sixth man back then. So, yeah, it's kind of a cool little story in itself.
I think the Bulls gave up on him way too quickly, considering they needed three-point shooting. That was a silly move. And then to bring in Rip Hamilton, who was a fine player in his prime, past his prime then, and not a three-point shooter really ever. that was one of Garpax's. Imagine that, Garpax making a questionable move. But and of course, the 76ers traded for Jimmy Butler a couple of weeks ago that we talked about. Butler's image has taken a bit of a hit, but certainly he's hit a couple of game winners in Philadelphia, so he's made his mark already.
Yeah, he's doing well in Philadelphia. I think that trade worked for both teams because you know, Philadelphia get another guy like Jimmy Butler who is experienced in kind of like the big time moments, or at least like more experienced than, say, Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid are. But on the other side of the coin, Minnesota Timberwolves got Robert Covington, who is an excellent perimeter defender and
can shoot.
And, you know, that's pretty much what Thibodeau likes in his players. So I can see him like playing him for quite a number of minutes.
And, Kemba Walker exploded for 60 points the other day. That was unexpected.
Yeah, Kemba's been on fire this year. He's probably the reason why the Hornets are where they are.
James Harden scored 51 the other day, I believe. Was it 54 points? It was 54 in a loss, I think. And which kind of negates the whole thing when you can score 54, but it's a loss.
Yeah,
I know it was over 50 because I also noticed that today the Rockets beat the Spurs, attempted 54 three-pointers. So I can see where Greg Popovich is coming. The Spurs attempted 28, All the analytics say three-pointers are great, but I flash back to what the Rockets did in the Western Conference Finals last year where they missed the 20-plus in a row, and I'm thinking, whatever the analytics say, if you miss 20 in a row, maybe it's time to change up the strategy and take a couple inside just to get you back on track and to score a couple of points.
Yeah, maybe just a little bit in further into the three-point line just so they can, I don't know, see a few go through the hoop. That's why Kevin Garnett used to be a jerk and, like, grab like practice shots so people couldn't see them go through the net.
That's how people
get like their momentum back.
The psychology of it, yeah, absolutely. Why goaltend, you know? Yeah, you don't see that much as much anymore.
No, not really.
That is the NBA today, I suppose. But I guess one of the most interesting seasons in a while, because obviously there's people talking about Lakers winning the championship. I don't know about that one. certainly not this year, I think. I think they're going to have some tough competition. Then we might need a few more pieces before that happens. Or LeBron's going to have to play as well as Nick Wright says he does. The West, obviously, very competitive. The East is up for grabs with LeBron out of the East, obviously. And the Cavs dropping off. Cavs have dropped all the way off to the second worst record in the league at the moment. They are 4-17 as we record this. The Suns are 4-18, though, even with the Ayton doing pretty well. Spurs 10-12. Like the West is very competitive because everyone's, all except for the Suns, everyone is either 500 or around it.
Even the Kings are doing better this season.
They're 10-11. Yeah, they're just under 500. Rockets, Pelicans, Jazz, and Timberwolves are all out of the top 8 at the moment. Dallas is in the top 8. Well, Doncic is playing really, really well. I think he's going to make a lot of teams regret underestimating him.
Oh, he's in a class of his own. He's by far and away the best rookie going around at the moment.
And it's really strange that people were doubting him because he's from Europe. I mean, who's that other guy that plays for Dallas who's also from Europe, I believe? Pretty good, you know?
Yeah.
Like, for 21 years now, 22 years,
He was a draft day trade as well for Robert Tractor Trailer.
Yeah, that's right.
May he rest in peace.
Indeed. But, yeah, they really seem to sleep on Doncic.
Yeah, definitely. I think, I don't know, it's one of those things where, I guess you kind of look at him and you think, oh, maybe he just doesn't look that athletic or something, or maybe his ceiling isn't that high for whatever reason. But, he's kind of proving that he is the real deal. And, credit where it's due. I think Trae Young is kind of performing above expectations. I know a lot of people kind of think that he's going to be a bust, but you look at a lot of the leaderboards, he's, I believe, second in points. He leads all rookies in assists, so he's not having a bad rookie campaign, but maybe the Hawks will regret trading, up or down for him?
I believe... believe down. Or was it up?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the Hawks aren't really going anywhere this season, but at the same time, Luka would have been a really great player for them to have in the future.
So a clarification on the James Harden game from the other day. 54 points and 13 assists. So it was actually another 50-point, 10-assist performance, which was once a rarity. We're seeing a few more of them in recent years with LeBron doing it a couple of times, Stephen Curry, I believe, and Harden. Harden had a really big triple-double, I think, last year with the 50 points as well and something like 15, 16 assists, but also 11 turnovers, and they lost to the Wizards. So...
Yeah.
I mean, is it really a great performance if you score 50 and lose? And certainly if you have 11 turnovers?
It's still an impressive mark, but at the same time, the performance is probably what people are going to remember at the end of the day. The loss is probably just going to be the footnote. But, it does kind of... does taint it a little bit, I suppose.
I mean, certainly Michael Jordan, it should be noted, had some really big scoring performances in losses. So Harden is in good company, and Will Chamberlain and a lot of other great scorers throughout history, naturally. I mean, you don't win them all, and sometimes it's not for your trying on the offensive end. Shot 17 of 32, 53%, 7 of 15 threes, 13 of 15 free throws. I mean, as far as scoring the ball, he certainly did his job. 11 turnovers is not particularly fantastic.
Nah, that's not ideal.
But and maybe some of that, with a few less of those, might have not have been a 4-point loss. But I think it's one of my pet peeves at the moment that people really highlight these big statistical performances, but it's in a loss, and you're kind of like, well, yeah, but the object is to win the game of basketball, and it is just a game in the regular season, of course, but eventually you do get into the playoffs, and right now the Rockets are out of the playoffs. You know, the Rockets wanted to be in the top eight. I say out of the playoffs, out of the top eight. I mean, I think at this point of the season, you don't want to give up too much ground at this point of the season still, because you don't want to be fighting. You don't want to get to be to January or February and you're actually still trying to fight it for a playoff seed, let alone really good, not to get into the playoffs, let alone actually getting a good seed.
Mm. I think Rockets are an interesting case because when you look at it, losing Ariza and Mbara Moute doesn't look like, you know, massive loss for them, but there were a lot of the Rockets' defensive identity last year. And
Carmelo's, you know, been a bust completely.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with Carmelo Anthony. I think he looks pretty much done, or, like, you know, if he wants to go play in China, maybe that's his option. But
it's looking like it, yeah.
Yeah, I would love to see him go and play for the Lakers, actually. I think that would be cool, seeing him team up with LeBron, his old nemesis, I suppose. But yeah,
would that bring would that bring them down, or?
Yeah, I mean, probably. But you know, as a fan, I kind of wanted him to go out a bit better than that, but I just don't see it happening.
You know, I think people have called him overrated to the point where he may be, in his prime at least, slightly underrated, because in his prime, he could, if nothing else, was a tremendous scorer.
And clutch, too. Mm. Like, people can't overlook the fact, I think, I saw a stat the other day that he had the most makes or something within the last 10 seconds or 5 seconds of a game, like, still most among active players.
Okay,
like,
yeah.
I guess, technically, you can't really call him an active player anymore, but, like, at least not now, anyway, but yeah. He...
Players who have been active in the last decade or so, shall we say?
He was that... Yeah, for a long time, he was that guy who you wanted to have the ball in his hands, like, when the clock was winding down, so... it's a shame that people are going to forget that because of his last, you know, few years.
If we compare him to the great players, not stylistically, because there's another player I would compare to him, but would you perhaps compare him to a player like a Dominic Wilkins, who's an explosive scorer, kind of an average defender, can get you some rebounds at the small forward spot, but really fill up the bucket, you know, but not necessarily be the team, not a player that could ever really build around for a successful team? Because I mean, you look at players like Dominic Wilkins. I mean, as far as playing style, I would say that Vince Carter is closer to Dominic Wilkins. But yeah, as far as having that career trajectory, I mean, Dominic Wilkins, fantastic player, not really noticed as a great defender, nor was Bird or Barkley for that matter, although they were probably better than people give them credit for, especially Barkley and Bird. But you know, there's been a lot of players throughout history that have been very talented scorers, but not necessarily led their team anywhere or been tremendous defenders. I mean, not everyone can be your John Stocktons or your Carmelo and Scottie Pippins. Michael Jordan, you know, arguably at one point in his career, the best player on both ends of the court. You know, not everyone can be that. LeBron is not that, despite what some people say. LeBron has not really been playing defense for about 5 years now.
Yeah, I suppose the Dominic Wilkins comparison is pretty apt. I would say that calling Melo an average defender during any stage of his career is fairly generous, but I can see the comparison.
And with that in mind, it is a shame that he doesn't get to go out on a slightly better note.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame. Like, as I said, I'm quite a big fan of his, like, you know, from his days in Denver, and Even in New York, I kind of felt he was a bit harshly maligned while he was there. He really wanted to be there. He couldn't question his commitment to that team. It ended up really being them who wanted him. Like, you know, they chased him out of town. I don't think, at least that was my perception anyway. Maybe there was other stuff going around, but yeah, it's just a shame because he really was one of the more interesting players to watch, particularly since like he had like that old school mid-range game. Part of the reason why I also find DeMar DeRozan interesting as well, because you know, I guess he has like an antiquated game, but still managed to be successful with it in the current game. So
I enjoy him for the same reason, and I think that is one thing that I do miss about the old NBA. And when I say that, I'm even talking about just a few years ago, before the whole 3-point revolution, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And I think the problem has been that people are trying to rely on this analytics of, oh, take a lot of 3-pointers, which are fine as long as you make them, but when you don't, it's a really dumb strategy, as both the Rockets and Celtics demonstrated in the conference finals last year in their respective Game 7s. But people are trying to beat the Warriors at their own game, and I don't think you're going to be able to do it with all those shooters, although this year, I think this may be the year of the Warriors that the injuries and fatigue does catch up to them. I mean, it's very early on in the season, but they have probably looked as beatable as they have in about 4 or 5 years at this point.
Yeah, they're looking pretty vulnerable. I know that whole Kevin Durant, Draymond Green situation that was kind of going on when I was in the States.
I think it's been smoothed over a little bit, but
yeah, I don't know how big that is, but you know, hearing reports here and there, I don't know how reliable they are. That you know. That Kevin Durant pretty much has his foot out the door, but, you know, whether that's just people kind of, I don't know, whether there's any truth in that or not, remains to be seen, I suppose.
Apologies for my phone going off there. I thought I had it muted. it is the Mac Quack on my phone, actually, and it's not even an iPhone. no, I agree, and as far as the styles of play, I think there will be a revolution as people realize that you can't beat them at their own game, that you can't necessarily rely on the three-pointer. And it's what I miss about the older NBA is that people did try the different strategies. So you would see the different clash of styles and trying to adjust to it. And I think, and you go back to Greg Popovich saying that some of the beauty of the sport has been gone as we've gone to this sterile analytical approach with analytics, of course, and the reliance on the three ball, you're not seeing some of the old school. You are seeing ball movement, of course, because pace and space is based on that.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not seeing some of the same differentiating strategies. You know, you flashing back, obviously, if you do want to go old school, you look at the Bulls and Jazz finals. You had the great pick and roll with Stockton and Malone versus the triangle offense of the Bulls. You know, and the way they would try and play that chess match and use their styles against each other. Now, when it feels like a bit of a 3-point shootout, you feel like, okay, let's just clear the court and have a 3-point shootout. You know, it sort of defeats the point of basketball. I was kind of glad to hear Greg Popovich, and people can say, oh, they can say what he likes. You know, he's got 5 championships. You know, this is Greg Popovich. He's got a lot more success than a lot of people who are going to hate on him. So, but I don't know. I mean, I don't want to be cranky about that. I want to enjoy, you know, I still love basketball. I still love the NBA. But I do miss some of that differentiation. It even comes down to seeing all these circular logos being the same. I mean, that's a very cosmetic point of view. But you look at it and you think, yeah, is the league just trying to be everything when it's being the same? There's no sense of identity and differentiation. I'd love to see that. And I'd love to see someone come in. And maybe it'll be someone like a Zion Williamson will come in and will actually revolutionize the game. Because, I mean, can you imagine if, with this new approach that there's no real sort of bangers inside or anything, if a player like Shaq came along today, how that would revolutionize the game? Because you're like, oh, geez, we can't stop this 7-foot monster inside. You know, we're going to have to bring back that traditional center, because otherwise he's just going to score 50 points a game every time you dump it down low because no one can stop him.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, Zion Williamson, he reminds me a bit of Blake, actually, back when he was super athletic. And, you know, Blake Griffin had one of my favorite rookie campaigns since Vince Carter. So I'm really excited about him coming into the league, and hopefully he can shake things up a bit, because, you know, that kind of athlete only comes along, like, you know, I mean, he's like comparable to LeBron. It's that's definitely one part I'm kind of excited about. But I do agree that the whole 3-point thing, it's made the game a bit stale. And there are times even where I was watching it on TV and I was like, okay, team goes for a three, miss. Yeah, the other team goes for a three, miss. Yep. Other team goes for a three, hit. Hooray. Like, yeah,
yeah,
that's what our games become.
And people talk about them being better three-point shooters, but you look at the percentages, and they're actually not that much different. It's just the volume has changed. So
yeah,
it's not really that they're better shooters. That it just seem more prolific because they take, when you take 10, you have a chance. You know, if you're shooting 30% back in the day and you're 40% and you're only taking 5 a game, that's what? That's 2 out of 5 a game. Whereas if you shoot 40% now, that's 4 out of 10. Or if you if you're taking 15 or 20 like Klay Thompson and Steph Curry do sometimes, you know, 40% is suddenly now what, 8 or 9 out of 18, 19, 20. So it's kind of skewed in that respect. And which is not that's being said, I do think Steph Curry is a strong candidate for one of the best shooters we've ever seen because he does have ridiculous shooting touch.
Oh yeah, I'd go as far as to say he's the best I've seen, but
wouldn't disagree.
You know, I think you know, as far as like the 3-point shots are concerned, you know, it's mostly about mechanics, I think, because the more you take, the more you're used to taking that shot, and the more chance you have of hitting. So you know, you could argue that if the players back in the past were able to take more shots, if that was what their system allowed, then they would be shooting at a similar clip to the current players.
I think so too, because we did see those Donyell Marshall and Kobe Bryant when they had the 12 threes, 12 out of 18 or 19. They certainly did it. It's just, it was unheard of to take that many three-pointers usually. But just to very quickly go back to a sec, to something you mentioned before, Blake Griffin, of course, in his rookie season, but of course he wasn't really a rookie, was he now? Just like Ben Simmons wasn't a rookie last year. I mean, not a rookie.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, we missed it in the basketball, in the weekend basketball gaming, but apparently there's a line, you said there's a line about that, because in this year's story in my career, you kind of aren't a rookie in your rookie season, because in the prelude, you play a game.
Yeah, so I noticed that I kind of skipped through a lot of it because usually I don't listen to David Aldridge's preamble. Sorry. I just want to get into the game. But they were like, oh, you know, some people will debate about whether it's really his rookie season. It's like, I'm not debating the fact. I know I'm not a rookie. Like,
yeah. Shouldn't be.
You know, it's a false equivalent saying that we experienced that last year with Ben Simmons, because Ben Simmons didn't play a game in his quote-unquote rookie season. So they're two...
Yeah.
Different situations. Like, if anything, we're more comparable to Julius Randle, because he got injured like within his first game of his rookie season, and then in his second season wasn't counted as a rookie. So,
and not to mention the great Yingadare did the same thing.
True. Yeah. So
he also rest in peace, unfortunately.
Yeah. Absolutely. But yeah. That whole thing just kind of makes me like, it makes me wonder whether the NBA should change their stance on rookies. Like, not like, I think it should change the other way. Like, if somebody's played less than 5 games in their like first season, they should still be counted as a rookie. That's what I think.
Pretty much are, yeah.
Mm.
But for now, the rule stands, except of course in 2K19, where we apparently are a rookie despite playing that one game.
When you think about it, it's a major plot hole, isn't it? The fact that you are a rookie despite playing one game in the previous season.
I mean, we're also considered the next big thing when you're rated 60 overall, so it's sort of... There are definitely some plot holes in that story.
Yeah, true.
And have been this whole generation, actually, but that is something we have discussed at length and perhaps we'll leave for another time. But yes, NBA season, not so bad so far. I've been catching a few games and three-point barrages aside, actually, you know, it is interesting, and it's cool to see your Nuggets and other teams doing well. It's great to see the Bulls tanking for another pick. they may not be trying to lose, but they certainly are losing a lot of them, 5 in a row. But once again, they're not tanking properly because they are not even last in the league. Of course, they're changing the rules this year on the lottery, so I suppose it doesn't matter as long as you're in the bottom 6. It's that's all that matters, I suppose. So. They are bottom 5 at least, so...
Fingers crossed for Zion.
Oh, yeah. Will they take him or will they trade away for a pick for Magic Beans? It is Garpax, so...
Marcus Fizer Jr.
Fizer. Only good thing about Fizer is he got me Kevin Garnett in NBA Live 2004. So I'll always appreciate Pfizer for that. So that has brought us to the end of episode number 267 of the NLSC podcast. Bit of a long episode, lots to talk about. Always fun to get on with you or Ben or both to talk about possible video games. Good to be back on the air.
Yeah, it is. It's been a good chat.
So as always, we hope you enjoyed listening to us. We encourage you to subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can also find us on other podcatching apps, including, I think we're on Podcast Addict. We're on Stitcher, at least. Search for NLSC Podcast. Look for our logo. That will be us. Or you can keep streaming on the NLSC, of course. As we always say, as long as you're tuning in and enjoying it, that's the main thing. You can also connect with us on social media. We're on Twitter, at the NLSC. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/thenlsc. We're on Instagram, Kenny, NLSC Basketball, just to change up the branding a little bit.
Excellent, excellent.
And of course, NBA-live.com is the website where we have our forums, our original content, the podcast, of course, our modern community, everything we do for basketball video games. Check us out, keep us locked for everything you need on the virtual hardwood. But yes, that is it for episode number 267 of the NLSC podcast. Thank you once again for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Kenny.
And remember, it's not the number on the badge, it's what you can do on the sticks.
And fuck Jay Williams. I mean, see you next time.
See you next Tuesday, Jay Williams.